Welcome to the Flourishing Leader Podcast, where we dive into the dynamics of the professional working world. I'm Audrey Simmons.
And I'm Belinda Joseph Puram. This podcast is dedicated to inspiring leaders to live a life of well-being, both personally and professionally, so that they too may flourish. We're having a really interesting conversation today about communication, actually. We want to take a few podcasts to focus on communication and particularly making oneself heard and the capacity to listen to others, because we've noticed that communication issues is something that clients talk about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of research around the impact of poor communication in workplaces. It costs businesses billions,
yes.
Billions and billions. I mean, I think in the UK, costs SMEs about 18 billion on average a year. Imagine in the US, it's much, much more than that, I would think. And so we're starting particularly today with how to make oneself heard,
mm-hmm.
if dealing with what we call a bullish boss.
Yeah.
And I think we were having a discussion about what we meant by that, weren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. We were kind of debating, like, are we referring, when we say bullish boss, is it someone who's intimidating? Is it somebody who's aggressive? And so, yeah, we wanted to really focus on how do you maybe cope ahead or prepare ahead for those conversations with those individuals, and then give some, pause for thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the term aggression, you know, that maybe in some contexts or some places of work, maybe it's an ideal to be, an aggressive leader. You know, perhaps that's an aspiration that people might have. But what we're talking about, the context in which we are using that term, is perhaps where it might be a bit nerve-wracking or frightening to engage with for wider team members, or where it might be causing some degree of harm, mm-hmm. even.
Yeah, creating like a culture of toxicity, creating a culture of silence. So I think the other thing that was interesting too is discerning between, you know, are we talking about, I mean, I think we've been clear, but, you know, are we talking about aggressive communication, or are we, you know, what's the difference between aggressive communication and assertive communication? And one of the things that I heard recently was this distinction between assertive and aggressive is oftentimes based on the intent, but it also can be witnessed as, does someone allow for a pause? Does someone give the felt experience that they are actively listening? Or is the intent to, they're not really interested in what the other person has to say? So there is no pause. There's just an intent to dominate the conversation or the individual.
Yeah, I would agree with that. To follow on from what you were saying in terms of the distinction between assertion and aggression, I sometimes think of it in terms of needs. You know, someone who's in that aggressive mode, and I'm thinking about aggression in the way that we're talking about it today, the more sort of negative or unhelpful aspects of it, they may well be less concerned with the needs of others. So they're trying, you know, they can be trying to get a need fulfilled by taking, forcing, or pushing for what they want or need. Whereas when I think of assertion, there's something that feels a little bit more considerate about it, of self and others. So it can, you know, ideally, the hope is that it would be about identifying what your needs are, considering whether it's appropriate to express that in any given instance, you know, expressing that simply, clearly, directly, and seeing what comes back, and then making a decision about how to respond. There's something that just feels more, considered about it somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like a give and take, right?
Yes. But also it's not about necessarily me getting my needs met at any cost, you know, and, you know, forget you.
That really is like the feeling of it when, even in my own experience and my own professional history, you know, it's like when you're engaging with someone like that, that really is the experience, that the felt experience, that the other does not care what you have to say at all, does not care about your well-being at all. They are telling you what to do or just talking at you with no space for feedback at all.
Yeah. And it feels terrible, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know if you've had the experience of, you know, being led by a leader or you know, whether behaving in that way, but it can be so, it can be really demoralizing. It can do quite a bit of harm, I think, to a team if it persists as well. It just can have such an impact on mental health and well-being and outlook on things. It's a real bummer, to put it simply.
It is. I mean, when I think back to the leaders who I have experienced, like leader to leader, right? You know, I'm in a leadership position, they're in a leadership position, I'm reporting to them. When I think of, I think initially it's the physical cost, because you've got that, you know, that your heart rate starts to speed up, your blood pressure goes up, essentially your brain starts to get short-circuited almost, because you're in that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn mode, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably the first cost that's paid in that sort of dynamic. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I would agree with that. You know, I think it's really important, I think, to have an awareness of where we are in terms of our stress response. And that can sometimes be being triggered long before we even know what's happening. You know, it may take a series of instances before we start to notice, oh, I feel like my heart's beating out of my chest, or my mind goes blank when this person acts in this way, or I feel really nervous, or I get the sweaty palms, or whatever it is, you know?
Even nausea. I mean, I've heard clients talk about, oh my gosh, when I am on my way to work, I feel sick to my stomach.
Yeah. The feeling of dread or doom.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really interesting piece of research not so long ago as well that said that if on the receiving end of this kind of a you know, aggressive behavior from a leader, team members will tend to perceive that as tough love. So they'll just take it.
Mm-hmm.
So people can be in that for a long while, having that stress response triggered over and over and over and over and over, initially rationalizing it as tough love, you know, but it's not tough love. Like, it's not okay in some of these instances, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, when we think about the results, initially, it can seem like, oh, this aggressive leader is getting things done because it sends the other leaders on the team kind of in a tizzy. They're eager to get things done quickly. However, oftentimes, those things have to be reworked. The work has to be done again because it was done too quickly. There were certain elements that weren't taken into consideration. And there's this loss of time, loss of energy. And you don't get the best ideas when you're in a panic.
No.
And I think too, like, the intention behind the work shifts. It shifts from being mission-based to pleasing an individual or staying off the radar of the individual, as opposed to showing up in your best, or with your best self, with your best ideas.
there can be this idea of, oh, this leader's such a go-getter and gets things done. And meanwhile, it's just making people's life a misery.
Yeah.
You know, frightening people. You know, there's a lot of hours spent at work. I think on average, what, 90,000 in a lifetime. That is a lot of time to spend working, and to dedicate a significant number of those already plentiful hours to being around an aggressive or a intimidating leader. You know, it really, I don't know, it really does give pause. It begs the question, you know, do you want to be spending your life like this? But I also think there's an opportunity maybe for any leaders who are listening to our conversation on this to consider, you know, are you somebody that leads in this way? And I'm asking the question not in terms of sort of blaming people, you know, but more to, you know, sometimes people are in leadership positions and they're not adequately supported in those, or they haven't been properly trained in those, you know, or maybe they've been led by leaders who behaved in that way and they emulate that. But I think there's a real opportunity to ask the question, do I lead in this way?
Right. Right. Because I think individuals, there are some who enjoy that way of leadership, are aware of the consequences and still lean into it. I think there are others that, like you said, they mimic the role models that they have been given and think it's working. However, these are individuals that do care about the mission. They do care about results, but perhaps have not been in that position long enough to see the ramifications yet of that leadership style. I find that like with leadership and the results, it takes time to sort of see how that's going to play out. For example, a leader may make a decision, let's say, you know, in February or March of 2023, you know, and you may not actually see the impact of that for a year or even, you know, 18 months sometimes. So somebody can be leading in that way before they realize, oh my gosh, no one's talking to me anymore.
Right.
So I love the question that you posed, you know, is this, you know, have you been given feedback in the past that perhaps your style is aggressive? Was that given to you by somebody that you trusted? Because we all know that people can give us feedback and it's not really meant for our best interest. You know, you could be an assertive leader and somebody could say, oh, you're being aggressive, and maybe they just want to be left off the hook, so to speak.
Yeah.
But if somebody that you've trusted has been giving you feedback, like, whoa, time out, we need to regroup here, that might be something to consider.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Audrey, because it, you know, the thought that crossed my mind is like, you know, there's a real opportunity, I think, in a lot of places of work to consider psychological safety. And, you know, the hope is that starts, that is led by and trickles down across the whole workforce. But the starting point is with the leader, right? And how a leader's kind of moving in their role. So it's, you know, if somebody is leading, but leading from that authoritarian, toxic, scary, intimidating place, you know, how can there possibly be space to build a work culture that has its roots in psychological safety, where people feel able to express and challenge and learn in a way that's healthy and beneficial all around?
Yeah. And I know we were kind of discussing the show today about aggressive meeting aggressive. Did you want to mention what you had brought up?
Sorry, could you say that again? Aggressive.
Yeah, just that before we started the show, we talked a little bit about how there are times where people choose to be aggressive, but it's,
oh, I see. Yes.
Intentional, because the other person has showed up in that way. And it seems at times that those individuals in particular only respond to like leadership, so to speak, like aggressive.
Yes. And I suppose part of that reflection as well was around, you know, sometimes when individuals are leading from that place, that sort of aggressive stance, that has been a means of coping, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Coping in quite challenging circumstances. But that doesn't mean that their vulnerability isn't there, but it's the aggression is almost like a sort of a safety or a kind of crutch
mm-hmm.
to sort of lean on for managing
mm-hmm.
these different workplace relationships.
Yeah, there are two situations that come to mind. One in which I myself moved into that space of aggressive leadership. And
oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, full transparency, yes. One, in fact, to this day, I have much regret over it. And I will say that even ended up sending an apology card to this person's spouse because the interaction had gone so south that the individual was very dysregulated. And I know without a doubt that impacted their evening, you know, and it had to have impacted their family. And
right.
I have always led with always and never, right? We got to be careful with those words. But my intention has been to take care not only of those individuals, those leaders that reported to me, but also their families, because if their families are not taken care of, they're not going to show up as their best selves.
Right.
And it was a deadline was approaching quickly. I had opened up a file and did not see the data I was expecting to see, called the individual and was in upset, to say the least. And I would say I was aggressive in demanding answers to why I wasn't seeing the data there. Like it looked like it hadn't been inputted. And I know that I was coming from a place of fear, the fear of missing the deadline, the fear of not being able to protect my team from scrutiny that would have resulted in this report not being submitted on time, the fear of that somehow my team was not in step with me. So what was going on there? Was I losing them? Right. Not that being aggressive is a way to say, oh, let's get on the same page. Right. That reminds me of an episode of, I think it's Everybody Loves Raymond, where the wife, Deborah, is like crying and yelling. And she's like, why don't you hug me? And the husband's like, I'm afraid of you when you're like this. So not a good strategy. Right. But full transparency, you know, that happened. And it came from a place of me being afraid, not only, I mean, primarily it was for my team. Like I was afraid for them. And then I was afraid for myself too. And in the moment, the phone call did end with many apologies, right? But I recognized the damage had been done. You know, I had taken this person from a place of them being centered to a place where they were not centered, to say the least.
Yeah.
And followed it up the next day to clean it up, to say, listen, moving forward, I am committed to that not happening again. That is not who I'm committed to being. And I want you to know that you can count on me to hold myself accountable. And I give you permission to hold me accountable too. If you need to, you know, slam your hand on the desk to say enough, I will receive that. And I owe you and your family an apology. And I remember her saying that her spouse was so surprised to receive this card and that it made such a difference for them. So I wanted to bring that up because I think given the right circumstances, we all can move into that space potentially. It's those individuals that stay in that space all the time because they think fear is power, like creating fear is power. But I just wanted to, that was one situation that came to mind. And I have another one, but I wanted to pause for a second and see what thoughts you have, if I've scared you, Belinda, because I've admitted.
No, not at all. Well, actually, what crossed my mind is I thought, oh, it's that there's something really beautiful and healing about what you've described, because, you know, it's just so impressive that in that instance, you were able to own it. And it seems to me that that goes a long way, you know, even in leadership, being able to say, oh, you know, I could have done that differently, or that wasn't my intention, or sorry, I'll do things differently going forward. I don't know. I think that's phenomenal. And I can hear that from what you're describing, that there was this really positive outcome with that. It's inevitable in leadership. I've certainly had my moments when I was a leader in the past where, you know, there were things I didn't get right or didn't do things the way in which I had hoped, or maybe done things and it was initially outside my awareness until someone brought it to my awareness. Yeah, sorry goes a long way, I think, when especially when it's followed up with different action.
Yeah. The other situation that comes to mind was when a toxic leader was being very verbally aggressive with me. Like, I cannot overemphasize that enough. It was verbal abuse, to say the least of it. And I mean, that whole experience was something, you know, because it impacted my mental health. It, you know, impacted safety. It impacted this experience of, you know, losing a sense of dignity. And in this final conversation that occurred, the person was telling me lies, but also discrediting who I was as an individual and as a professional. And I remember sitting there, and I was quite young. I was probably in my early 30s. I remember trembling. And then I remember standing up and saying, "Are you finished?" Which is pretty aggressive, right? "Are you finished?" Standing up. They said no. And I said, "I am." And I walked out. Now, I walked out of her office. I didn't walk out of the job, to be clear.
Right. Yeah.
And then made some follow-up calls and all of that. But to be that situation where you are being met with utter toxicity, lies, pure aggressiveness that is meant to harm you, I believe, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, is I believe there are times you do have to meet that type of aggression with an aggressive response. Like, I was not interested in hearing what else there was to be said. I was not going to stay in that space. I was done.
100%. Yeah. And I think the art is in knowing which is appropriate for which situation. But, you know, I think it's reasonable not to expect to be abused in your place of work. And I certainly think it's okay to remove yourself from that situation if that's happening.
The Flourishing Leader podcast has two sponsors: Team of Greats LLC and Eudaimonic Therapy and Coaching. Our first sponsor, Eudaimonic Therapy and Coaching, provides psychotherapy for people struggling with stress, anxiety, and depression. Also on offer is executive coaching for leaders experiencing stress, burnout, and other well-being issues blocking personal effectiveness. For information or to book a free consultation, please visit www.eudaimonic.co.uk. That's www.eudaimonic.co.uk.
Our second sponsor is Team of Greats. Team of Greats is a coaching company partnering with professionals around the world, including those with ADHD or ADHD-like characteristics, offering individual leadership coaching, team coaching, and mindfulness courses. For more information, reach out to www.teamofgreats.com. That's G-R-E-A-T-S
teamofgreats.com, teamofgreats.com.
One of the things that struck me in what you were describing, you know, because some of the people that I've come across over the years, or some different clients I've worked with over the years, you know, some of them have trauma histories. That kind of situation for somebody with a trauma history can potentially be, you know, there's something really interesting in you describing the trembling, you know, it can be so scary and so terrifying, and it can prompt people to go back to those places of powerlessness, you know, where they're really feeling their powerlessness, that someone in a position of power or authority is being aggressive towards them, and that they can sometimes revert back. And all of the kind of stress response that we were talking about earlier, that can be activated.
Mm-hmm.
But it is possible to learn to regulate oneself in those moments and to remove yourself from those situations. Now, I'm not saying that what you experienced was a trauma, Audrey, but
I think it was.
It
was very uncomfortable. And in fact,
yeah,
it was a result of me approaching this boss to have a discussion about, I would really appreciate if these miswritten emails that say I've done something that I haven't done, if they could stop, because it's not helpful. And that was the response I got, was full-blown absolute aggression. And the other thing that comes to mind too is, and I probably won't get this quote right, but I think about this quote that I read a long time ago, that even if your voice trembles, speak your truth. And that has gotten me through some really tight spaces.
Yeah.
Like when you say, yeah, like, how do you get out of that space? You know, I think too, like having short things to say, like, are you finished? Changing your posture, you know, going from seated to standing, to sort of let your body know, like, you're taking action, shifted the space a little bit.
Yeah. And also I think there's something about giving yourself permission to not necessarily get it correct, because I don't know about you, but there have been some instances I've been in where after the fact I'm like, oh yeah, and I should have said this. And when they said that, I should have said this, and this should have happened. And then it's a whole conversation in my head about, you know, what a tough nut I should have been in that particular situation. But sometimes if the best you can do is be like, no, and right, leave.
Yeah.
Fine. You yep, know, that there's always the opportunity to go back afterwards and be like, well, okay, I wasn't quite able in the moment, but actually having reflected on this A, B, C, D, and E.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's an opportunity for being articulate at a later time.
Yes. Yes, I love that, because ultimately you, in many ways, are responsible for what you allow yourself to be exposed to. Now, not ultimately, right, okay? I know that that statement can be taken out of context and be just completely incorrect.
Right.
However, when we're talking about a professional setting, and even at times that, you know, may not resonate all the time, but the majority of the time, I do believe that you are a co-participant in what you tolerate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I say that gently because I know that can not feel great to some folks, I'm sure. You know, I think if I was hearing this for the first time, I'd be like, but you don't understand my bullish boss.
Yeah.
You know, like, but you're so correct. Like, we can say no and walk out and then come back and be more articulate.
Yeah.
I love that. Permission to not get it right.
Yes. Because otherwise it becomes, you know, you're, as you described really beautifully earlier, I mean, your brain's just not able to, you know, if you're in that heightened state, in that stress response, you're not coming out with long, beautiful sentences at that point. You know, your brain's probably a little scrambled at that point. So if no is all you can manage, or even just getting up and leaving, is all that you can manage. If that's all that you're able to do at the time, that's plenty.
Yeah, I think too, like with that situation, the mental health cost was tremendous because I stayed too long in that conversation.
Right.
So, I mean, really, I stayed too long because those words echoed in my head for a very long time. And thank goodness for, you know, I've always been one to surround myself with excellence, excellent people, you know, and thank God I had that support because, man, I mean, we're hard enough on ourselves, but to add somebody else's toxic words just can really spin you out.
Yeah.
It can actually, you know, contribute to you making more mistakes. And like we've talked about earlier, just short-circuiting your brain. And then the impact of even, like you mentioned, Belinda, you know, reflecting on the conversation and going over it over and over again, right? Like that almost, you know, kind of planning for the next time and saying how you would have done things differently and all that energy and time that's spent doing that wears on you. I mean, our energy is finite.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I know that we, you know, we've been reflecting on the cost of dealing with a boss like this, or even maybe being a boss like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering then, what are the key things to hold in mind in terms of responding to this, like mm-hmm. being heard with somebody like this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the, you know, I was talking about just the short responses, right? Like what,
yeah,
maybe starting from like a worst case scenario, like all you can muster up is standing up, right?
Yeah.
And kind of short phrases that you could practice so that when you're in that moment, you have something in your back pocket that's ready for you.
Yeah.
Like, no, are you finished? Even, you know, if you do have it in you to say, you know, thank you for your feedback. You were heard, and I will think about this feedback and I will decide what to do with it. Because then in that essence, there's like a reclaiming of and a setting of a boundary, right? That
yes.
Yeah. You've been heard. I got it. And I will decide what I'm going to do with this. Just because you said it doesn't mean I'm in agreement. Just because I heard it, I'm not in agreement necessarily, nor does that mean I'm going to do anything with this.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful way of kind of retaining your own power and agency mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of protecting that. I think there's also something about if you are taking the decision to step away mm-hmm. whilst you're communicating that, just making it clear that you will return.
Mm-hmm.
So that the situation doesn't, you know, it's sort of part of de-escalating things that, you know, just making it clear that you need time to step away, but you will, can be helpful in some instances.
I was just pausing to think about like different hand signals that can be used to communicate that when perhaps somebody's not able to articulate, you know, if it's like, no, and, you know, putting your hand, like your palm up, not above.
Like a stop gesture.
Yes. Yes. Not, you know, not having the arm fully extended. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Belinda, go right ahead.
No, I started cracking up because I was thinking not like sort of really close to the person's face either.
Oh no. Yes. Not wise. And understanding personal space in that situation gets larger, right? Our need for personal space when we're that agitated gets larger, not smaller. So yeah. No palms and faces. I think a good rule of thumb, if you will, is making sure, you know, your arm's not fully extended and making sure it's not above your shoulders.
Yes.
Having it palm out as opposed to using, you know, one finger to communicate one moment, please. I understand that with different studies, unfortunately for women in this study, it was interpreted as an aggressive move when you're pointing the finger or using one finger as opposed to the full hand.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I think pausing and like, or using your hand and then nodding and then walking out the door, because I think the nod is sort of important in that, like, yeah, I hear you. I need a moment. And what are your thoughts about that? Like if someone did that to you, like if they put their hand up, nodded, and were walking out the door, I mean, other than pretending to choke on something, I mean, what would you, okay.
I can't imagine that there would be a great deal I could do about that.
Right.
At that stage, you know, if we're having a conversation and it feels like a conflict, mm-hmm. or a difference of opinion or something is happening, I mean, it depends on the moving part, but you know, if they've left the room, there's not much I can do about that. And that's the helpful thing about it, I think, just being able to leave the room. And I think it's really important to make I statements before mm-hmm. that happens as well, and to try as much as possible to omit the term you, if possible. You know, pointing a finger coupled with the word you, mm-hmm. you know, can sometimes be perceived as an attack. And what that can result in is the other person defending against mm-hmm. that perceived attack. When we're talking in I statements, I feel, I think, you know, I might just take a moment. I, you know, that tends to be also less debatable.
Correct.
I can tell you how I feel, but you can't tell me how I feel. So I statements can be really helpful at that point as well.
I also appreciate the I statements. For sure. And also if there's needed for more dialogue around it, saying, and like, I appreciate this question. And
yes,
I do not, you know, feel, think, want, whatever that looks like. Right. Instead of because.
Or but.
That invites, like you were saying, that invites almost a debate, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or but as well is another interesting one. You know, I hear what you're saying, but.
Yeah.
So it's because despite everything, you know, as long as, you know, if you're in harm's way, mm. you know, it is reasonable to remove yourself from those circumstances. If there is just a heated disagreement or discussion or something that's not quite okay, you know, I wonder whether there are opportunities to try and make yourself heard, but also to hear the other person. Like you're in a dyad, there's two of you. So the hope is to, because I think the funny thing about these kinds of things as well is that conflict in this context isn't necessarily always bad, which might seem like I'm negating everything that we're talking about. But, you know, conflict is a healthy part of relationships. There's a lot of benefit that can come from it in terms of growing in awareness about other people. It can solidify relationships mm-hmm. as long as there's been some sort of repair around the rupture.
Oh, I love that. I love that, Belinda. Repair around the rupture. Yeah, definitely. Conflict definitely strengthens teams and
yeah.
It also protects, it just helps people reach the best decision or see the best choices or options available to them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you get this group think that happens and it can really walk you right off a cliff. And you may have a lot of fanfare around that too, as you're walking off the cliff.
Yeah.
You don't want that. You want people to say, ah, you're about 10 feet away from that cliff. You want to be careful.
Yeah. So we're not necessarily aiming to avoid conflict, avoid challenge at all costs. But I guess there's a real opportunity to assess what is it that's actually going on here.
Yeah. I like the term artificial team harmony, right? Not that we're necessarily, I mean, I think what we're really talking about is being comfortable having boundaries,
mm-hmm.
what you will tolerate, and what you will not tolerate, how you will be spoken to, and when you will decide this is not okay. And some of that may be kind of pausing to think about, what does that look like for you as an individual, as a leader? Like, when is it not okay?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And are you being true to, or is there an opportunity for you to really hear, you know, that feeling that might tell you, actually, this is not all right. I'm not comfortable with this. Mm-hmm. That wasn't okay for me.
Mm-hmm. And if you find yourself having caused, I'm going to use harm loosely here, but having caused harm on the other side for the mm-hmm. recipient, owning that quickly,
yeah,
cleaning that up quickly.
Yeah. I love that. I think that, I mean, that's major, I think, what you just said there. That's major.
Yeah, we have to keep our side of the street clean for sure.
Mm.
You know, as leaders and as teams, we want our teams to be above board. And, you know, we want to be in integrity. And I think that is an ongoing process that requires, you know, a commitment to relentless self-awareness. Yeah. And just understanding that you're going to be in integrity and you're going to be out of it. And when you're out of integrity, the way to get back in is ownership and a recommitment to what people can anticipate from you in the future. This Being Heard series, I'm very excited about it.
Yeah.
I love the idea of the different aspects. I don't know if, do we want to do a teaser for our listeners?
Oh, so some of the things that we're going to be covering.
Yeah.
In this series. Well, one of the things that we wanted to talk about next was about leaders giving feedback to high performers. So, you know, how is it that leaders might handle members of their staff team who are also themselves leaders and driven, ambitious, that maybe don't want to be highly capable, you know? How do leaders give feedback in those circumstances where you've just got these two, big entities
mm-hmm.
working with one another? That's something I hear about sometimes. Do you?
Yes. I mean, I think, and I would love to hear from our listeners, you know, we would love to hear from you, you know, send us some emails if you agree. But, you know, I think the two most challenging conversations to have are one with, you know, a bullish boss, and the next one may seem like the sheer opposite. And in many ways it is, but it can be very challenging to sit with a high performer that the last thing you want to do is, you know, demotivate them. The last thing you want them to do is to be hurt at all. You just need this one thing to be tweaked, right? And how do you approach that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that conversation. That'll be a really interesting one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be great.
So fun to talk about this with you. And I know that, it feels like a little part of a big picture somehow which is why we have our series focused on being heard. But yeah. Been fun today.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Thanks for listening to the Flourishing Leader Podcast. We would love to hear directly from you. Please reach out to us by emailing contact@theflourishingleaderpodcast.com.
As we all know, supporting what you enjoy by taking action matters. If you enjoyed today's show, please make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast app and leave us a review.
You can also find us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and LinkedIn.
Thank you again for listening in. We look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, take good care of yourself.